Brokenshire again. Are you ready for the second lap of our big bumpy journey? The first part here is devoted to another aspect of the East-West power struggle, the uneasy subject of aggression. Fasten all seat belts. Here we go.
This is Radio Moscow, and here is the news.
In view of reports that North American aircraft are violating the airspace of Brazil and that in the region of the Amazon, radar stations are being built, Deputy to the Federal Senate, Braga, has petitioned the government to state whether it is aware of these activities. In spite of the world scandal created by the fiasco of the open intervention of the United States against Cuba, there is material evidence that the United States is preparing for a repetition of this attack, again under the leadership of the CIA. It has become known that President Kennedy gave instructions to the Central Intelligence Agency to increase the recruiting of new mercenaries for a second invasion, which will be combined with acts of sabotage. A Cuban radio announces that an American aircraft carrier invaded Cuban territorial waters today and shelled a beach at Siboney near Santiago. Five jet planes rose from the aircraft carrier and made menacing flights over Siboney. The radio announcement called this provocation another aggressive act against Cuba by American imperialism.
Vice President Johnson's tour of Southeast Asia has done absolutely nothing to promote world peace. He told the press conference that the United States was prepared to take any decisions and any risk in that area. It almost sounds like the late John Foster Dulles announcing the start of another brink of war adventure, doesn't it? We may expect another sharpening of the situation in Southeast Asia as the United States interferes more energetically.
About 100,000 people in six provinces of southern Vietnam took part in rallies and demonstrations against the increasing interference by the United States in their affairs. They insisted that American imperialists get out of southern Vietnam and call dictator Ngo Dinh Diem a traitor.
Small war is to be the means of putting the new yoke on the emancipated nations.
It is most interesting to know that small nations are emancipated only when they adopt communism. Also, we have heard strong accusations about our role in Southeast Asia. And we may well ask if a nation must remain passive in those circumstances involving the current situation in Southeast Asia. Now we shall hear about Kuwait.
More than 5,000 British soldiers are now concentrated on the Iraqi border. British warships, including the carrier Bulwark and the frigates Luck Elvy and Mian, are anchored in Kuwait territorial waters. The Iranian newspaper Kayhan admits that Kuwait has been turned into a huge military camp. For scores of years, the territory has been under British protection. Situated in the Persian Gulf region, Kuwait is fabulously rich in oil. By exploiting this wealth, the American and British monopolists rake in huge profits. Last year alone, they amounted to $1,000 million. It's not surprising that to British businessmen, the loss of Kuwait would be equivalent to bankruptcy. On the other hand, it is very risky in our time to continue openly plundering Kuwait's wealth. Actually, the granting of Kuwait's alleged independence was only another colonialist trick aimed at preserving the colonial system in the country. Commentary was by Anatoly Shvakov, and it came to you from Radio Moscow.
With regard to Kuwait, we should ask that you read the printed explanation on this record jacket. Now, remember the fight over Suez? Here is the East's version of it.
The theory of so-called limited or local wars has become very popular lately in the West. What were Britain, France, and Israel after when they launched the local war against Egypt? They wanted to crush Egypt and intimidate other Arab countries fighting for their independence. It was their aim to put fear into other peoples of Asia and Africa. This adventure, as you know, ended in failure. The Soviet Union and all the other socialist countries came to Egypt's defense, and the aggressors retreated.
It is only a half-truth. The fact is, the United States did oppose Britain, France, and Israel on Suez. Next, we're going to hear something that involves an interesting point on aggression and interference. It revolves around Angola.
Can humanity reconcile itself, asks the Soviet government, with these monstrous cannibalistic plans which are being carried out for all to see and in violation of the solemn declaration of the United Nations on granting independence to the colonial countries and peoples? The answer is no. This clearly shows the connivance of all the colonialists in one another's crimes, and the Soviet government is quite right when it states that responsibility for the crimes in Angola is borne not only by Portugal, but also by its NATO allies.
Moscow Radio has just called for less interference in the affairs of underdeveloped countries and more interference in the affairs of NATO countries. May one country interfere in another's affairs without being charged with interference? And who is to pass on the morality of that interference? The three-man commissions? The troikas?
Tomorrow is the 185th anniversary of America's Independence Day. On July 4th, 1776, the American Congress passed the Declaration of Independence, a document which proclaimed the sovereignty of the new state. The declaration, written by Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin, inspired the American patriots who took up arms to defend the liberty and happiness of their country. What would Thomas Jefferson say if he could enter modern America today? He vowed that his native land would be an enemy of war. However, today he would hear certain American politicians speak of the necessity of war. In the lobbies of Congress, he would be able to talk with a swarm of politicians preaching a strong-armed policy and hatred between the peoples. We shall not delve into history and recall the capture of Mexican lands, the Philippines, or the invasion of the Isthmus of Panama. Let's take a look at things of a recent period. The people of Vietnam are fighting against the French colonizers. America fully supported the colonizers, supplying them with weapons and money. The people of Laos are defending their independence from the colonizers. Who is fighting against the Laotian people? They are the puppets of America, armed with American weapons and subsidized by Washington. What about the Congo? Kasavubu and Mobutu, the miserable lackeys, drawing money from the Central Intelligence Agency, murdered Patrice Lumumba, the leader of the Congolese people, dispersed Parliament, and are now tearing the Congo into bits. What would Jefferson say about America's policy in relation to Cuba? When Batista, the bloody dictator, was thrown out by the people, Washington began an all-out war against Cuba, which is continuing to this very day. Was such a policy set down in the Declaration of Independence?
All the way back to the Mexican War? After all, we only took away Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, and a part of California, didn't we? We did leave them something, didn't we? Now, in Latin America, it is quite true that we are not universally liked and admired. How would you have liked to accompany Adlai Stevenson in his swing around South America? Here it is, Radio Moscow reporting.
By the President of the United States, with the special mission of compelling the governments of South America to support the anti-Cuban policy of the White House, Mr. Stevenson has visited Venezuela, Argentina, Uruguay, Brazil, Chile, Paraguay, Bolivia, Peru, and Ecuador. From the newspaper reports of the last few days, the conclusion can be drawn that Mr. Stevenson's mission has been defeated, except in the case of the dictatorial regime in Paraguay and the corrupt clique which is in power in Peru. He has not succeeded in forcing the governments of the Latin American countries to come out openly against revolutionary Cuba. As the Mexican paper Prensa shows, official circles in the countries of Latin America have received Washington's representative with cold reserve and irritation. Thus, the government of Venezuela told Stevenson that it was indignant at the unceremonious manner in which the American oil companies were making themselves at home in the country. Ruling circles in Argentina protested against United States dumping. In Bolivia, the State Department's political peddler was met with firing in the streets.
And from Radio Havana, we hear this familiar phraseology.
Latin America knows all too well what the work of Wall Street imperialism is worth. They know it is fully capable of saying Alliance for Progress when it means, in reality, Alliance for Misery. After all, look at all the tragic experience the countries south of the Rio Grande have had.
This is Radio Havana, Cuba.
Next comes a deadly serious subject, that of West Berlin and the threat of aggression. Aggression, Eastern style.
Every person, if not deprived of common sense, sees and understands that the signing of a peace treaty is the way to improving relations between states. The granting to West Berlin of the status of a free city would mean that all countries of the world wishing to maintain economic and cultural ties with the city would have the right and possibilities to freely exercise these ties. Of course, agreement would have to be reached with the country across whose territory pass the communications that link West Berlin with the outside world. If any country violates peace and crosses the borders, ground, air, or water, of another country, it will assume full responsibility for the consequences of the aggression and will receive a proper rebuff. There are some in the West who threaten us, saying that if we sign a peace treaty, it will not be recognized, and that even arms will be brought into play to prevent its implementation. Evidently, they forget that times are different now. We are capable of giving a proper rebuff to any use of force, and we have what is needed to defend ourselves. West Berlin has been turned into a center for espionage and provocations against the socialist world. America's refusal to find a reasonable solution to the Berlin question suggested by the Soviet Union can lead to an explosion. That would be fatal for the United States, too.
There is no need to brandish arms, carry out mobilizations, to threaten and to blackmail. This is not a time for provocations.
Here the East is saying that the very existence of a West Berlin within their borders is uncomfortable and an irritation to them. They also oppose the reestablishment of the same united Germany that has already started two world wars. The East threatens to go to war over the issue. Before a power struggle develops into a nuclear struggle, it might be a good thing to put the real issues in the Berlin dispute well out in public view. A full discussion on war and peace can only be elucidated on the terms of those who are promulgating war or peace. War is the inevitable successor to peace when peace efforts fail.
The struggle for peace means the struggle for the independence of the peoples against colonialism, for the liberation of the peoples from the yoke of imperialism, for the liberation of man. It means the struggle and labor in order to end the exploitation of man by man. The struggle for peace means to assert your independence in the face of colonialism, to assert the right of nations to self-determination, the right of every nation to decide its own fate, to maintain its sovereignty.
For the leaders of the United States, the time for agonizing reappraisal has come. Among the nostrums advocated by the theoreticians of Washington are minor and local wars. What is this little war theory? Until recently, the leaders of the United States regarded thermonuclear bombs as a cornerstone of their policy. They imagined that at the mere threat of America's atomic potential, the peoples would become petrified with fear, like rabbits in front of a boa constrictor. Individuals may have the heart of a rabbit, but not peoples. And then an end came to the United States' monopoly in atomic weapons.
Very likely there will never again be a monopoly of such weapons.
It has never been a secret that the aims of NATO have nothing in common with the preservation of peace. French Communist Senator Jacques Duclos has asked Premier Debray in a letter about a document exposing the Nazi past as high now commanding NATO's ground forces in Central Europe. The document has been discovered in Soviet archives.
Sober-minded politicians are forced to admit that the Soviet Union has brought to the fore a problem of world importance. Let us bear in mind that 99 out of every 100 bomb generals and admirals served in the same capacity under Hitler.
If this be true, it would really bear investigation and action. And by what standard is it determined if a known Nazi has reformed?
A sober and objective examination of the international situation will reveal that the world is faced with a choice between peaceful coexistence and war. There is no other alternative.
It is well known that the Soviet Union has been working staunchly and consistently for a solution of the Solomon problem. But if you respect reason and realism, you must admit that under the present conditions, with two social systems in existence, the socialist and capitalist, there is only one way to maintain peace, and that is through peaceful coexistence. Prime Minister Khrushchev said in a speech in Tbilisi, Georgia the other day, that in view of the actual situation, and in view of the fact that the nations must live and develop on a single planet, we must find a common language for the relations between countries with differing systems.
If we are to coexist, there must be an extraordinary effort by the people of each side to understand each other. Because if we are to believe only the policymakers, why do we talk at all?
We consider all religions to be basically reactionary. For be it Mohammedism, Buddhism, or Christianity, they all preach essentially the same thing. Be patient with life on earth. Accept all and everything. Turn your left cheek to the man who struck you on your right cheek, for he will go to hell and you to the heavenly kingdom. It, that is religion, is against men fighting for their freedom. Religion has always opposed education. Giordano Bruno, Galilei, all of those people were burned at the stake by the Catholics, that is, Christianity. And if in the beginning Christianity played an important role, and at times even a progressive role, in the history of mankind, it has, through the ages, become a tool of reactionaries the world over. I want to add that according to the materialistic world outlook, all phenomena in the universe and on Earth have a natural character and are a result of the laws of development of nature. That is why we have no place for the supernatural. We regard everything from the primitive cell to man as a form of existence of matter, and we believe that matter is in a constant state of change and development. But we are tolerant towards people who are religious, and we follow Lenin's teachings that one must be very careful in fighting religion, that much harm can be done by those who hurt the religious feelings of others. And Lenin said that you must fight religion by means of education in an understandable and convincing way. Beginning with ancient Egyptian shrines, where a complex mechanism run by a system of waterways seemed miraculous to the people of those times, down to ancient Greek oracles who made use of special air tubes, and including all the Catholic miracles, say, virgins who shed tears that were piped up into their eyes through specially arranged tubes, all these supernatural things were frauds. Now, I personally have not heard of these shrines that light up at night, but I can say this. The Church has always produced miracles when its position was critical. Today, the Church is steadily losing ground.
In our country, where the people have every opportunity to receive an education, and where people are brought up on a materialist philosophy, this is especially noticeable.
Therefore, it is quite natural that it tries, by hook or by crook, to keep its few followers.
Since you mentioned religion, Vladimir, I think it would be in place to say that people in the Soviet Union are absolutely free to worship if they want to, and they are not hindered in any way whatsoever.
Free world, police state. Both phrases were invented by us to designate the difference between East and West. Judge for yourself. But remember, when a cop stops you on the road, you may shout, "Police state," but not to him.
The Americans are fond of saying that their democracy is founded on the belief that people themselves are capable of telling good from evil. But the Anti-American Activities Committee has appropriated the right to decide for everyone what is good and what is bad. The bill which it has drawn up is aimed at making Americans read only those newspapers which are approved by Washington and which give a tendentious estimate of events. It remains quite obvious to all that it is a body which lowers the dignity of American citizens and whose function is to control other people's lives.
It is strange that the East should ridicule what they interpret as one government police state agency when they do the same thing themselves most thoroughly with their controlled press, their one-party system, and their Marxian ideology.
In our country, everyone's opinion is respected, provided it proceeds from an objective analysis of reality.
This might be a good idea, but I have misgivings about what is reality to me as opposed to someone else. And by the way, is the opinion of a Nazi to be respected, or a Ku Klux Klan member? The following section provides some typical examples of the way in which the machinery of propaganda is used. See if you can sort out the emotionally charged words that are intended to arouse the listener to action.
Let us turn to the communist program. The target they are working towards, the banning of communism, is a society of eternal peace between nations, freedom for all nations, universal well-being and prosperity for the people of the earth. What could be more patriotic than fighting for the happiness of one's people? That is a fair appraisal, with which it is impossible not to agree.
Yes, what is more patriotic than fighting for one's own people, whether they be capitalist, socialist, communist, or whatever? Blood is thicker than vodka.
No matter how hard the reactionary bourgeois propaganda machine tries to minimize the Soviet Union's decisive role in the struggle against German fascism, these events are another reminder that militarist groups in the West have not abandoned their schemes and that the people must not relax their vigilance in relation to those who have learned nothing from the lessons of the past war. The decisive factor that is restraining the aggressive forces in their desire to unleash war is the increased power of the USSR and the other socialist countries. The time has passed when adventures launched by imperialists could go by unpunished.
True, nor will aggression in any other camp go unpunished.
You can be sure that if the United States and Britain really wanted an agreement to stop nuclear tests for all time, they could find the arguments for it and convince their NATO ally friends to stop its experiments in this era. Since they do not, it only shows again that they do not desire any such agreement. The blame lies chiefly with the United States, which pursues a policy of obstruction and red tape. In Laos, the voice of Pathet Lao commented that the Soviet Union's lucid and constructive proposals reveal that the USSR invariably abides by the principles of peaceful coexistence and the right for all nations to decide their own home and foreign affairs.
It seems most illogical in these times to speak of all nations deciding their own home and foreign affairs regardless of the rest of the world. No decision fails to affect other countries.
Marshal Semyon Timoshenko noted that the chief burden in the war against the fascist invaders fell to the Soviet Union. The victory, he said, was determined on the Soviet front.
Russia alone could never have survived. Remember the Murmansk run?
The principle used by reactionary Western propaganda in writing about the socialist countries is, charge others with what you yourselves are doing. But fewer people are to be found every day who believe these inventions of the capitalist propaganda machine. People everywhere know that the Soviet Union is a land of peace.
Most folks are inclined to accept things like politics at face value. Independent thinking is rare. But in our own free world, we hold and treasure the freedom to think and disagree. Can we have this freedom and then not use it?
The governments of the Western powers will be taking on themselves a great responsibility before the peoples of their countries if they only reply with maneuvers and subterfuges to the clear, resilient, and high-minded Soviet position.
Some of my best friends and worst enemies are clear, resilient, and high-minded.
The Soviet Union honestly abides by its obligations not to experiment with nuclear arms. This is an honest proposal, permeated with a sincere desire for mutual understanding.
Time and again, the Soviet Union has given convincing proof that it is ready to light not only a small candle, but a big bonfire of friendship and mutual understanding.
Upright people everywhere wish Mr. Khrushchev that tireless fighting for peace success in his mission.